This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the next big thing in anti-inflammatory supplements, a brand new all-natural daily preventative against a host of possible inflammatory issues. Black for Health liquid extract from Future Farm Botanicals. Black for Health combines four plant-based foods, black garlic, black radish root, black cumin seed, and black peppercorn, containing high levels of body-ready healing botanicals. Black for Health supports your liver, skin, cholesterol, blood pressure, and weight management, circulation, and immunity. It's a tasty supplement with liposome complex for optimal absorption. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's myfuture, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and I think you'll find this a very, very useful accompaniment to some of our recent podcasts, which focus on the mitochondria. The mitochondria are the powerhouses of the cell, and they're the focus of much research, and also they may be the key to wellness when it comes to a variety of health problems. They also may be the very key to aging itself. And I came across an excellent book by today's guest. It's entitled Mitochondria and the Future of Medicine, The Key to Understanding Disease, Chronic Illness, Aging, and Life Itself. Our guest is Dr. Lee No. Yes, he's Dr. No, but it's spelled K-N-O-W, which means that it's not a negative. It means that he's smart because he's in the K-N-O-W. And he's a licensed naturopathic physician based out of Canada, graduate of the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine. He has been a medical advisor, a scientific evaluator, director of research and development, and he now provides consulting services to the natural health products and dietary supplement industry, in addition to managing scientific affairs for his own company. So he's written this great book, which I think provides us an opportunity to do a deep dive on the mitochondria. So without further ado, here's Dr. No. Dr. No, so tell us a little bit about the mitochondria. What are they? And, you know, we'll get into some of the implications of for disease and overall aging a little later.
Sure. Yeah. So first of all, thank you, Dr. Hoffman, for having me on your show. It's a pleasure to be here. But yeah, with mitochondria, it's a fascinating topic, and I think most people are going to hear more and more about it in the coming years. So I think it's a good idea to kind of start with the basics, just to make sure everyone's on the same page, and then we can, like you said, go deeper. But in terms of what they are, I think most of us remember back from high school biology, where we learned about the cell biology and the different organelles within the cell. And keep in mind, organelles are very similar to a cell, similar in the way that organs are to our body. They're distinct structures that carry out specialized function. And for the mitochondria, its main function within a cell is to produce energy. And when you consider that everything that happens within a cell contains or requires energy, you can understand the importance of the mitochondria, because without the mitochondria, we wouldn't be able to provide all these different cellular processes with the energy that they require. And, you know, things like muscle contraction, that's easy to guess that it requires an input of energy. But, you know, the shape of the cytoskeleton or the transport of ions across membranes, these all also require an input of energy. And that's where the mitochondria becomes an increasingly important part of that cell physiology.
And indeed, you recently just pointed out to me that the mitochondria have something to do with detoxification, that the body has the ability to resist the effects of toxins, but toxins impair mitochondria, but mitochondria are also essential for getting the toxins pumped out, so to speak, or metabolized.
Right. It's, you know, when you look at the function of the mitochondria, so when I mentioned that its primary role is to produce energy, it also functions in so many other capacities, and you mentioned detoxification as one of them, but you know, it also plays a role in things like cell death. It produces a number of different lipids and proteins, It can even allow our bodies to adapt. So very similar to the concept of detoxification is hormesis or mitohormesis, where, you know, small amounts of these toxins actually make our body stronger. So there are a lot of other aspects to the mitochondria that that a lot of people don't know about.
Hormesis is a little bit of what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So, you know, we don't have to live in a bubble necessarily, unless we're extremely chemically sensitive, because actually an exposure to a toxin helps to upregulate our detoxifying systems, correct?
Correct, yes.
Yeah. Well, I think there's an interesting story in how mitochondria evolved, because we're only beginning to understand that, and it actually provides us with some insights in terms of how certain drug side effects, for example, side effects to antibiotics have emerged.
Right. Yeah, so the evolution of the mitochondria, you know, dates back, you know, nearly 2 billion years ago, when everything on Earth that we could consider life was essentially single-celled bacteria. And what normally happens when one bacteria engulfs another is that that engulfed bacterium would get digested. But in this particular situation, that engulfed bacterium actually didn't get digested, and over time evolved to have more of a symbiotic relationship with its host. So you can almost think of it, mitochondria starting out as a parasite in another bacteria. And over the course of the next 1.2 billion years, that symbiotic relationship was refined to the point where now we have, that original bacteria, and now functions as a mitochondria and is passed down from mother to offspring, and has now become such a critical part of cell biology and cell function that it's really impossible to separate the mitochondria and its host. And now, as you mentioned, that also speaks to understanding different compounds and how they interact with our mitochondria, and knowing that mitochondria were initially bacteria, it would obviously make sense that antibiotics in particular have a damaging role in mitochondrial function. So making sure that, you know, when you start to look at these different components and the history, you really start to understand what helps and what can be detrimental with respect to the mitochondria.
So, for example, it's known that certain antibiotics can cause what's called ototoxicity, loss of hearing ability. Is it possible that that happens through mitochondrially mediated damage to the energy-producing organelles within the hearing apparatus?
Absolutely. And I can't say specifically whether ototoxicity is related to dysfunctional mitochondria, but we do know that antibiotics and different classes of antibiotics have a particularly damaging effect. So it would easily make sense to me that side effect would be caused from mitochondrial dysfunction induced by antibiotics.
And there's some evidence that there's a relationship between antibiotic use and obesity, and some of that may be due to destruction of the microbiome, but perhaps some of it is due to diminished energy production and improper metabolism when these antibiotics slow down the molecular machinery.
Absolutely, that's right. I mean, when you consider that mitochondria is our metabolic machine, if you're damaging the role or the function of the mitochondria, of course, you're going to impact metabolism, which can set you up for things like obesity and other aspects of metabolic syndrome.
So it's interesting that you mentioned earlier that mitochondria are inherited maternally, which is kind of interesting, because we generally think of, you know, 50-50 inheritance. You know, you get half from your dad and half from your mom, and, you know, sometimes it's 60-40, but it's kind of, you know, you mix up the attributes and you get either blue eyes or brown eyes or, you know, baldness susceptibility. But actually, when it comes to our energetics, is it possible that mostly that's determined from the maternal line?
Absolutely. And that's important. And that's another aspect of the mitochondria that's important to know, that the mitochondria has its own set of DNA, and we only inherit our mitochondria from our mother. So as you said, maternally inherited. This is in contrast to the DNA in our nucleus, which comes from both the mother and the father. And that's the type of DNA and the genes that most people will know and understand when we talk about genes. But what we're starting to realize is the increasingly important aspect of mitochondrial DNA, the DNA that we get only from the mitochondria and only from the mother. So looking at the maternal line and the health of your mother and her mother, your maternal grandmother, is going to become increasingly important when we start to look at chronic diseases.
Now, that might be the way we would change the way we take a medical history, because we might focus in particular on the maternal line. You know, your mother and your maternal grandmother might determine, say, your longevity or your susceptibility to degenerative diseases or chronic fatigue.
True. That's right.
Okay. So what are some of the things that put the mitochondria at risk that could have a damaging effect?
Well, yeah, so we already briefly mentioned antibiotics, but you should know that there are other pharmaceuticals that can have a damaging impact to the mitochondria. And the one that I often kind of point out is statins. So statins are a class of drugs that are prescribed to help lower cholesterol levels. The problem with statins is that it blocks, when you block the production of cholesterol, you also block the production of an important nutrient in the body called coenzyme Q10. And that's a critical nutrient for the function of mitochondria. So when you,
which is also referred to as ubiquinone, and you know, that's a fancy word for it's everywhere.
Right. That's right. But when you take statins, what you end up essentially doing is inducing a state of CoQ10 deficiency. So, and without CoQ10, your mitochondria just doesn't function properly. But I also cover a number of other drugs in my book. The other thing to keep in mind is that there are a number of environmental toxins and chemical exposures that have shown to damage mitochondria. So a number of different pesticides have been shown to damage mitochondria, which is probably another good reason to choose organic if you can. Other things like artificial food dyes have been shown to damage mitochondria. So, you know, just looking at the scope of different compounds, I won't say that all synthetic compounds are damaging and natural compounds are not. That's not the point here. But a lot of things that we are exposed to will have either a positive or negative impact to the mitochondria. So that's something to be aware of. But I think what's probably most relevant to to your listeners right now is a mismatch in supply versus demand. And when you have either an excess amount of calories that you consume from your food versus what you actually need, or on the flip side, you might be consuming, you know, say a moderate amount of calories, but you're not physically active. You're not really using up that energy. And that's where the mismatch in supply versus demand comes from. And in these situations, you see an increased rate of free radical generation within the mitochondria. And I should also mention that the mitochondria is the primary site of free radical generation within our bodies. So when you have this mismatch, you generate, you know, an increased number of free radicals, and that can directly damage the DNA within the mitochondria that we talked about earlier. And once you damage that DNA in the mitochondria, certain proteins are not able to be built properly, and the whole energy-making function of the mitochondria starts to unravel.
So if I can interpret this correctly, there are problems with sedentary lifestyle, but there's also problems with, say, the Bataan death march, you know, like overexertion and caloric insufficiency. That can also create problems.
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of the things I always try to mention when I talk about physical activity and exercise, because we get the message, and I am sure, unless you've been living under a rock, that you've probably understood by now that physical activity and, exercise is incredibly important for many aspects of health, and there's a direct tie-in to the health of the mitochondria. But to your point, too much of that, or at an intensity that's way beyond what your body can actually handle, you're actually doing more damage than good. So, you know, moderation is the key for everything, especially things like exercise, physical activity, as well as caloric intake.
Well, the case in point was one of my patients who I remember very well, because he was a world famous not just a marathoner, he was an ultra marathoner. He would routinely do 100-mile races. He was known for really setting the bar for these ultra endurance events. At the same time, he was also a vegan. And at the time I'd seen him, he was in the waning phases of his athletic career because he was suffering from extreme weakness and debilitation. He ultimately passed away. You know, perhaps I didn't have enough in my tool bag to help him, or perhaps he, in effect, burned out his cellular machinery. You know, he was running on fumes, literally. And right. I could really, you know, get a sense that he was suffering from mitochondrial burnout.
Right. You know what? It's interesting because I do cover that topic of, you know, extreme sports like that in my book. And one of the things that I do talk about in relation to that is how those types of activities can deplete what we call our purine pool, or the compounds in our mitochondria that actually are the basis of ATP, or the energy molecule within the body. And this is also important to know, because if you are one of those individuals that, you know, participate in these extreme sports, there are ways or supplements that you can take to kind of minimize your risk of the damaging effects of, you know, those intense, physical activity events. But again, I think in most cases, you're looking at people that are going to be, you know, hopefully taking more of a moderate approach to physical activity. But you're absolutely right. In those situations, it can have more of a damaging effect than a positive one.
Well, in the book, you talk about the mitochondrial theory of aging, and you actually talk about some of these other previously accepted theories of aging as perhaps being superseded by the notion that it's the mitochondria that determine the rate of our decline.
Right. Yeah. So, and right now, and of course, science is constantly evolving and changing body of knowledge. But at this point, it seems like the mitochondrial theory of aging is the most accurate and evidence-based theory of aging that we have, and really overcomes a lot of the gaps in logic and the loopholes that plagued previous theories of aging. So basically what the mitochondrial theory of aging implies, as you said, was that it's the mitochondria and its health that really dictate our biological age and our potential longevity. And this really looks at the free radicals that are generated within the mitochondria as being the main drivers of that. Whereas the previous theory that kind of preceded the mitochondrial theory of aging, which was a free radical theory of aging, really considered all sources of free radicals as having a detrimental impact to aging, the aging process. So including external sources of free radicals. Again, when you're looking at the mitochondrial theory of aging, all those external sources really have a very small role in aging. Now, that's not to diminish their importance. You know, those external sources can bring about certain diseases, but really won't have a huge impact to the aging process. And that's one of the defining features of the mitochondrial theory of aging, is that we're really looking specifically at the mitochondria and the free radical leakage that results from those organelles.
Is there a way to determine the status of your mitochondria? You know, recently I interviewed Dr. Sarah Myhill, one of your good colleagues who's in the UK, and she's coined the phrase, it's not hypochondria, it's your mitochondria,
right,
when talking about chronic fatigue syndrome. So she described a test that unfortunately is performed only under certain circumstances in England, which actually can speak to your mitochondrial sufficiency or insufficiency. Is there another way to get a handle on that?
At this point, I haven't come across a lot. I would say the best resource that I've come across is actually Dr. Myhill's book, where she talks about more the ATP profile, or the energy profile within a body. So they're looking at different metabolites within cells and kind of determining a picture of mitochondrial health almost indirectly from the presence or the levels of certain other compounds. I would like to believe that there is a lot of research happening right now that would kind of allow us to measure mitochondrial health better in the future. But at this point, I haven't really come across a good test that I can hang my hat on.
You know, if you go to a conventional physician and you say, you know, I think I have a mitochondrial disorder, they might humor you. And the test of choice is a muscle biopsy, or perhaps they can do urinary organic acids. But they're very stingy about handing out the diagnosis. You have to be, you know, super sick. And many of these mitochondrial disorders are actually disorders where they're apparent in childhood, and they cause people to die early or go blind. So you think we're missing the boat by not being subtle enough in our appreciation of the spectrum of mitochondrial disorders, where you know, it's not all or nothing. Either you're doomed, or you're, 100% okay.
Yeah, I agree. I think having a more nuanced understanding of our mitochondrial health is going to be valuable, especially when you consider, you know, what normally happens as we age is we have decreasing function of our mitochondria. So if we are susceptible to potential early onset mitochondrial dysfunction, it would be valuable, I think, to know that early on in life. So, you know, you could avoid things that could potentially offset or damage your mitochondria. So it's having some sort of a test that allows you to get, you know, a score of mitochondrial health, I think would be a valuable tool. But like I said, I don't think it really exists. And to your point, I think, you know, a muscle biopsy might be one of the better options at this point, but that's quite invasive, and I don't know if
shows up in a muscle biopsy, it might be so advanced that it wouldn't pick up on a more subtle, you know, say a 30% reduction in your mitochondrial capacity.
Right, and what happens is that as our mitochondria starts to dysfunction, it undergoes essentially inefficient or broken mitochondria, so to speak, get digested within the cell. So those defective mitochondria actually, you know, are removed quite effectively from the cell. And then, of course, if you have enough defective mitochondria within a cell, that cell itself is kind of quietly removed from the tissue. So when
Is this something called autophagy?
Right. That's exactly it. Yeah.
Okay. The body kind of eats up, digests away the detritus, in effect.
That's right. And it recycles the components, things like that. But, one of the things is that, and one of the problems with things like muscle biopsies is that, if your body is efficient at removing defective mitochondria and removing these defective cells, when you take a muscle biopsy, you might not really see the propensity to chronic diseases later on, because your muscle biopsy would give you an appearance that everything's okay when it's not. So there is a lot to kind of take into consideration when you're looking at mitochondria. So I think muscle biopsy might be one aspect of what would give us an overall picture, but there's a lot more that we would need to look at.
Okay, great. We've laid the groundwork for our discussion of mitochondria. The book is Mitochondria and the Future of Medicine, The Key to Understanding Disease, Chronic Illness, Aging, and Life Itself. In part two, we're going to focus in on some of the conditions which are related to mitochondrial dysfunction. And we'll also talk solutions, what can be done to support and encourage and revive the mitochondria. Our guest is Dr. Lee No. He's a naturopathic physician and a consultant to many vitamin companies and various research entities. And I recommend the book very highly if you want a primer on the subject of mitochondria. More to come in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine Podcast.